This is Dare to Be Authentic Talk Radio Worldwide with relationship coach, life coach, and author Mari Mitchell, broadcasting live from Southern California.
Hi, and welcome to Dare to Be Authentic Radio. I'm your host, Mari Mitchell, and I'm so happy to be here with you today. I have a very special guest. His name is CJ Hudson. He's going to be talking about his book, Destiny Lives on Fairhaven Street, and how we always have a choice as how we turn out as people. He, as a young boy, made the choice to become the man he wanted to be, not the man his upbringing and those closer to him said he would be. He's the author of Destiny Lives on Fairhaven Street, a memoir where he's brutally honest in sharing his experience. Welcome to the show, CJ. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Good. So tell us a little bit about how and why you decided to write your memoir.
Well, this was something that had actually been in the queue in my brain for about 25 years leading up to this point. It was, as I've explained before with other people, it's like you know something is gold. You have it in your head, you know it's gold, you're just trying to pick the right time to do it. And about 4 years ago was when I finally, you know, I was at the point in my life when I could do it. And so, like I just mentioned, it took about 4 years to write it, mostly because I'm a bit of a perfectionist. No, the whole process was rather arduous. Rewrote it 8 times, and then I put it through 6 complete editing cycles, and then it was actually rejected 138 times before I finally self-published it.
Well, good for you. I just love that you just were able to take that rejection over and over and over again, but you still got that book out there, and I'm so happy you did. I read it and absolutely love it. I love write, and it's just riveting. You just can't put it down. So as you said, it took 4 years, a lot of work, a lot of heartache. Would you share with us we'll go with the worst thing first. What was the worst thing you experienced as you were getting this book ready for publication?
Well, when it comes to the actual process, the worst thing by far was having to relive everything over and over and over again.
Yes.
And it was something that I needed to, you know, to go through. And it wasn't just a matter of just putting words to paper. It was something that for me as a writer, in order to make this book the absolute best that it could be. And basically what I always told my editor was that if I could put on paper what was in my heart and in my head, that it would do extremely well. So in order to be able to do that, I had to actually relive it and not just, you know, go over everything in my head, but actually experience it to put myself back into that situation.
Right.
So, and as I previously mentioned, it was over 8 times, as with every single thing. That was by far the worst part, just because of, you know, having to relive that. And the crazy thing was that my wife would look at me and she could just tell that, you know, I was just tired all the time. And, you know, my body was showing the effects of it. But what happened was is that in the end, it came out with an amazing book.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about the best thing. What's the best thing you experienced as you prepared this book for publication?
Well, I would have to say it's a toss-up between actually holding it in my hand for the first time, the actual completed novel, and then when I received word that I won my first award. That was something that was a huge thing for me, because I had just come off the tail of a rather unflattering review, where literally the last words on the review was, "This book will not be popular." So, So here we are. This was back in July, because my mother had just passed away. And so that was back in July, and by November it won 11 awards.
Wow. So much for critics, right? That's wonderful. As you you talked about the worst thing being having to experience this over and over again, the terrible things that you suffer as a child, the abuse, et cetera. As you did relive it, though, did you find a little bit of catharsis? Did you find some relief from it through this whole process?
I did towards the end of the process. Really, the catharsis came from having the final product.
Mm-hmm.
That was, to me, the most important thing. And the problem is with the perfectionist mindset, you never truly get to the final product because you'll always reread it. Well, I could have done this better. I could have worded that better. I actually did a comparison a while back on my Facebook, the Facebook for the Variant series, where I compared to the act of writing to being a parent. Where you have this idea that you know, you create this idea and it lives inside your head and then eventually it pops out, and you basically, you know, you write it, you nurture it, and then as time goes on, it becomes like a child to where you're protecting your idea from people speaking ill about it and whatnot, and then eventually the child grows up, and that's when you start giving it to editors to try and make it even better. The child is raised, you know, it keeps getting better and better. The book comes together more and more. Eventually you get to the point to where it's time to let go.
Yes,
and,
absolutely.
You know, by that point, exactly. The child has grown up. You've done the best you can. And that was one thing my editor tried to point out to me. I think she's getting a little tired of having to redo it. But hard to say.
Right,
but,
right.
And so eventually you just, you let it go. And then you get to the point where, you know, you hope that the child or the book in this case will do you proud. And in my case, I was very fortunate to have that be what happened.
Yeah, I'm a writer as well, and I know the process very well. The first book I wrote, I just finally had to say, okay, that's it, because I could read it a million times. I still read it sometimes and say, oh, my gosh, I should have read this way. And you never are done with it. But there is a time, and I love the way that you make the analogy of when you have a child, because you just got to let it go and let whatever happens, happens. Let whatever be. And I'm so glad that it was good happening for you. So
you.
As you said, you've won 11 awards for this book. Congratulations, number one. Did you, ever think that the book would be this successful as you were writing it and going through all that painstaking work, you know, of getting the book?
at the risk of sounding arrogant, yes. I mean, I don't know about 11 awards, but, you know, I knew that it was going to resonate with a lot of people.
Right.
And I think that was something that you know, really meant a lot to me. It almost seems like, in my very, very limited experience with writing, that there's two schools of thought. You have the average reader school of thought, and then you have the publisher school of thought, where, you know, the average reader wants to be entertained. They want a good story. They want something that will help pass the time. It's no different than watching a movie. Whereas the publisher, they're looking at content. They're looking at style. They're looking at all these technical things that get involved with having a book. Now, obviously, it's more of a yin and yang, to where you have a little bit of the opposition in each side. So, you know, sometimes you'll have your readers that will have a little bit of a publisher's mentality, and you have your publishers will have a little bit of a reader's mentality.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that's a huge part of it, because it's you have to have that comparison of the two. So what that does is that it really, I felt that my book would really identify more with the reader.
Yes.
As opposed to the publisher. And so I wasn't expecting any awards. I really wasn't. I was expecting to get good reviews, and, you know, and that would be good. And I was very lucky that I got those, but the awards completely floored me. The first one floored me. I remember I was at work, and I'm not going to repeat what I said, but it's a bit of an explicit, but it was a good explicit. So, and they kind of looked at me like, what was wrong? And I explained it, you know, I just won an award. So, and by the 11th one, they're just kind of rolling their eyes. Okay, yeah, you won an award. Yay, whatever.
Right.
You won so many of them. Yeah, so, but yeah, to answer your question, I did expect it to be successful, but they're also, in some respects, I did not.
Okay, good. So I know that we spoke about the ending of the book and how, and I don't want you to give any of it away, because I want the listener to get it and read it and enjoy it as much as I did. But I know that you were just so brutally honest. and it's not the type of thing that a male would be brutally honest with, you know. How did it feel, number one, to be that brutally honest? And what do you think that it does for the reader as they get to read that?
It felt a little scary at first, you know, because once it's out there, it's out there. Yep. There's no take backs. But I knew that in order for it to be not only successful, but also as cathartic as I needed it to be, I needed to be absolutely honest, no matter what. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, what was the second part of the question? I apologize.
How do you think that affects the reader as they're reading you and your honest, your truly honest self?
Well, I mean, first of all, the overwhelming majority of people that have replied to it have been very, very positive. There's like with any other book, there's going to be detractors. There's going to be people that just don't get it or don't like it or whatnot. And this book was no different. I had people that absolutely hated the ending. They hated it. And they, one person actually, became so personal that they tried to give away the ending. And I called them out on it. Because it's, this book, it is controversial. Like I mentioned before, when you and I spoke about it, it is a little controversial. It's something that goes against the societal grain when it comes to relationships. The whole idea in general goes against the idea of what society accepts as normal. It is not normal for a 13-year-old child to decide not to date anybody for 8 years because he's in love with the first girl he ever loved. Mm-hmm. One is not supposed to do that. One is supposed to go out, and by one I mean a male in this particular instance, is supposed mm-hmm. to go out and date and have fun and sow their oats and all this good stuff. I didn't have any oats to sow. I only wanted one person, and that was it.
Right.
And of course, when you look at the circumstances of my upbringing, as I've told my mother before in the past, before she died, it's like, I had to grow up very quickly.
Yeah.
This was not something that, I don't want to make it sound like I'm boo-hooing everything. I'm not. But at the same time, I didn't really have the luxury of being able to be a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So it's understandable that when you grow up quickly, you're going to develop feelings quicker than most people. So, mm-hmm. and the great thing about Danielle was that she was kind of in the same boat, although she came from an entirely different upbringing and she didn't have to experience abuse or anything like that. But we were both kind of, old souls, I guess you could say. So,
yeah.
And that was something that really played into our relationship and then of course my subsequent decision to not date anybody. But it's not normal. It's not something that people normally do, especially
mm-hmm.
nowadays with relationships being disposable.
Yeah.
And this was something that I really pointed out in the book, and I also pointed out online. It's like, this is not your normal memoir. This is not your normal romantic story. This
mm-hmm.
is real. This is not a fairy tale. There's going to be things in it that are going to make people uncomfortable. People don't like hearing about abuse. They don't like hearing about somebody, my father almost killing my mother in front of me on the last day he was with us. It's a very uncomfortable thing. But as I explained in both the book as well as online, it needed to be done because my boys never had to experience it.
Yeah.
They never, and thank God, that was the goal. But unfortunately, that was a double-edged sword. Because what happened was that they never had to experience it, but I wanted to make sure it never came back.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to do that, they needed to know exactly what I went through. They needed to know how brutal it was, because then they'll get an idea, okay, I'm not going to do that to my kids.
Right, exactly.
So, and that's the overarching point of the book. It's the love story is great, and it's wonderful. It's a truly amazing part of it, and it is the heart and soul of the story. But at the same time, it's about keeping the cycle broken.
Yeah, I love that. And that's what I love the most about your book, actually, because other people, other children, or now maybe adults, have been in the same situation as you. And in that book, you encourage so strongly, and you bring across the fact that you don't have to perpetuate what you lived. And in your book, you mentioned 100 years of women being abused and children being
mm-hmm.
abused. That cycle broken because you made a decision. That's amazing to me, CJ. Absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
I applaud you for having the courage to put this out, because people will be encouraged, lives will be saved, children's lives will be saved, women's lives will be saved, because it only takes one person to read something, learn something, and say, hey, I could do something different. There could be something different in my family. And so
exactly.
So, I want to say that's absolutely wonderful. Well, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. And in the meantime, we can open up the lines. And if you want to call in and ask CJ a question or talk to him about the book, The number is 929-477-3869. That's 929-477-3869. You can start calling now, and we'll be right back.
From feeling broken and ashamed to unlocking potential and transforming your life, it is possible, as you'll see in Transformation Coach Christina Foxwell's new book, The Glass Angel. Foxwell shares her story of breaking free from shame and fear and finding hope, love, and freedom, and guides you to do the same. Get your copy of The Glass Angel, A Guide to Freedom, Peace, Transformation and Growth by Christina Foxwell at Barnes & Noble or on Amazon.
Cowboy Wisdom Hypnoacuity is wisdom energizing, fun opening personal expansion. Expands you out of yesterday, energizing today. Enterprising your dreams to experience your now connected desired life. Robert A. Wilson.
Hi, and welcome back to Dare to Be Authentic. I'm your host, Mari Mitchell, with special guest CJ Huston, talking about his book, Destiny Lives on Fairhaven Street. Now, one thing about your book, CJ, is that you wrote it to your sons. In the book, you're talking to them throughout as you bring forth information, as you give them lessons. How did your children, I want to hear about their, once they were able to read it, what was their response or reaction?
Well, they really have much of a response because they're only five at the moment.
So it was
something that I wanted to get out as soon as I could, so that way when they got to the point, to the age where they could actually understand it, that they would be able to tell me. But they are very interested in the book. They've looked at it as much as a five-year-old can, and I look forward to the day when they can tell me what they think about it.
Mm-hmm. Why did you write it as almost as a letter to them, but like an extended letter with all these stories?
I thought it was more personal. I've seen so many memoirs, and I mean this with all due respect to everyone out there who's ever written a memoir, but it's just, I didn't want to follow the typical formula where it's just A happened, then B happened, then C happened, and this is how I felt.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be something different, to where, as I described to a publisher once, I wanted to do it as a quasi, it's like a quasi-diary, I guess you could say.
Right.
Where
yeah.
It's not quite a diary, but at the same time, it could be seen as almost as such. And that was so important because I felt it added a real personal element to it. It's almost like the reader is looking in on something that's happening as opposed to being told a story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that because every time that you would speak to your boys, it was like I could picture almost like you're seeing a movie on TV and the person is talking to their children and telling them about their, you know, their past life. I could see it like that, so I fully understand. And it feels really nice to read it that way. I really enjoyed it. So
thank
we
you.
Talk about the message that you have in the book about breaking the cycle of abuse. Is there another main message that you wanted to bring to the public?
Well, it's something my editor and I joked about. There's multiple messages in this book.
Mm-hmm.
One of the main ones I want to stress, and people will know this as they read, is that first love never dies. It's something that, you know, stays with you no matter how many years go by, even if it doesn't end well, because everybody's experience with first love is different. You know, some have a positive experience, some have not so positive experience, and some kind of have a neutral experience. But it never quite leaves you. And to me, especially in my case, you know, it's not just first love, it's also true love, because true love, no matter what happens, is going to stick around. It's just going to keep growing every year. And that's something that has been, you know, it was important, not only with Destiny, but also with the subsequent books that are going to come after it, because this is only book one of a series that's going to go over my life, about how, you know, Danielle and I are throughout the years, and how my life, you know, how our lives intertwined, and how, you know, I, for example, with the second book, you know, I have a couple of instances where I encounter celebrities. I did, you know, security for Britney Spears for one night. because I was, you know, in the Navy, and we had a program called NWR, and she was at the sports arena over in San Diego, and I was able to do security, and they flagged me to go backstage with her and protect her.
Wow.
So I did that for a few hours. Just little things like that, little things about my life and how, you know, it deals a lot with that first love element, and how for me there was, you know, it was one of those situations where, as I said before, first love never dies. That's the main message, I think, more than anything.
Yeah, I love that. I also love the message about that you don't have to be the person who people are trying to tell you you will be. Like, you'll be just like your father. Or you'll be just like your mother. Or you'll be just like your aunt. People like to tell us these things when we're children. And you actually proved that that wasn't true. You know, and it's hard as
exactly.
It was. In the instances that it would have been easier to go and take the violent way, but you completely chose not to all the time. That's pretty amazing. So let's talk for a moment. Did you want to say something?
No, it's okay.
Okay. Let's talk for a moment about how to get a hold of the book, CJ.
Well, there's a couple different ways. Actually, it's more than a couple. It's currently available on Amazon, as well as Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Target. We're almost, I think almost all major retailers are concerned, the ones that sell books. My website is https, the Fairhaven Series. It's all one word, .com. I'm also on LinkedIn, Facebook, as well as Twitter.
Okay, great. And the website is right here on the Blog Talk page. You can link right there, right into CJ's website to get the book. Awesome. So is there one last thing that you'd like to say to a listener, something that's really deep on your heart today?
Just to reiterate what you were talking about earlier, about the idea that that no matter what your situation is, no matter what your past is, no matter what your experiences are, you always have a choice as to how you turn out. And I think that's something that's sorely missing in our society nowadays. I think a lot of folks, they tend to hide behind circumstance. And they tend to think, well, this is how it is. I'm a product of my environment, so there's nothing I can do. Just throw up their arms, and that's it. The problem is that, and I can speak this from my own personal experience, because one of the things I always desired in my life was power over my own life. Mm-hmm. When one does that, when they throw up their arms and they just say, well, I can't help it. This is how I am. This is how my environment made me. They're giving away their power.
Yeah.
They're giving away their ability to enact change, and it's, I can kind of understand why to a point, because it's scary. It's frightening, because with the idea of taking power and trying to make change, there's always that risk of failure. But at the same time, nothing ventured, nothing earned, as I say.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's so essential when it comes to the story. It's like, if you don't take the chance, if you don't try, then you are just reliving the same problems over and over again, and there will never be any kind of progress.
Yeah, that's so true. And one thing I'd like to point out, which you already know, is that doing this is not easy. And that's probably maybe why so many people don't do that, don't take that road, because it's hard. It's hard and it's scary. It's both hard and terrifying. But
yeah,
it's a choice that you make. You know, it's not like it's a walk in the park. No, it's very, very difficult. And you show that in your book.
Exactly.
Yeah. So any last thing you want to say? We have about 6 minutes left. We can chat a little bit longer.
No problem. Just that, it, as I stated before, this is not your typical memoir. There's going to be a roller coaster of emotions, and this has actually been reiterated by reviewers as well. It truly is a roller coaster. You're going to have highs and lows. There are going to be things you're going to be uncomfortable to read about, like I mentioned before, about the abuse, specifically Chapter 2. That's going to be a big part of it. But what is great about this story is the fact that it is a real life example about how romance is not dead. It's just on life support.
Ooh.
It's something where it shows that it's okay as a man to dedicate yourself to someone and just be completely devoted to them. And especially with me, with my circumstance, I was in a situation to where there was very little chance of success. Doing what I did was a massive risk, because it was something I was sacrificing arguably the best years of my life. but I was mm-hmm. doing it for someone who I loved and who I felt was worth it, because as I stated in the book, there was no way that I was going, I wanted to be with her. I wanted her to be in my family, but there was no way I was going to let her be in a family where she was just going to have to relive what my mother and my grandmother
right.
and my great-grandmother had to endure. I just, I loved her too much. I didn't want to do that. So as a gesture, I ended 100 years of abuse. And it, to me, it was like the ultimate grand gesture, was because of the fact that, that she meant so much to me that she would push me to completely alter the course of our family. And to me, that, once again, that's a big part of the heart and the soul of the book. And it's really one of the things that people love the most about it.
I do. And I wouldn't call it a gesture. Gesture seems to, like, it's a small word. I would call it a huge accomplishment. I mean, what you did was a huge accomplishment to be able to break. And it wasn't like it was an accident. I accidentally broke the cycle of abuse. No, you worked really hard on yourself in order to be able to do that. And
exactly.
Yeah. So, and I love, I'm just going to give a little tidbit. I love the role that martial arts played in this, because I'm a martial artist myself, and how it teaches you self-control, not violence. People don't realize that. And mm-hmm. I love the role that, that played in it. And you're going to have to get the book if you want to read about it. So,
exactly.
So, and I want to tell the listener that we have been doing a live show right now, but they're creating a replay of it as we speak. So after we're done, it's available right on this same link indefinitely. So pass this on to people that would like to read the book, people who maybe you know they're in a cycle of abuse, and maybe this book will do something to pull them out of that, because that is, everything is possible. Anything is possible. Thank you so much, CJ, for being on the show. Thank you for allowing me to read your book. It was just such a pleasure. It was hard. There were chapters that were so hard for me to read, but they were necessary. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't just for the shock value. That's not what this book is about. They were necessary in order to continue with your story and with your point.
Thank you very much.
And thank you all for listening in to Dare to Be Authentic Radio. Remember to check the replay on this. Remember to go to the website, the Fairhaven Series. So it's DHEFAIRHAVENSERIES.com. You can link right to here. Go see the book. Go learn about CJ, more information about him. And make sure you catch us on the next episode of Dare to Be Authentic Radio. Bye for now.
This is Dare to Be Authentic Talk Radio Worldwide with relationship coach, life coach, and author Mari Mitchell, broadcasting live from Southern California.